Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow. Let it overflow with love.
Good morning and welcome to We Are Just Christians. Thanks for tuning in today to the show. We really appreciate you being here with us so much, and we'll be on for till 10 o'clock this morning. Hope you can stay with us for all or part of that hour. We Are Just Christians is a live call-in show. And as we mention each time, in just a moment, I'm going to give you the numbers to how you can reach us, some other contact information. We'd like to have your input into the show very much. That makes the show interesting. And we'd like to hear what you have to say about whatever topic is on your mind. My name is Mike Schmidt. With me is Gary Jones. How are you, Gary?
I'm doing fine this morning, Mike.
We're the elders of the Church of Christ on Savona Boulevard, and like I say, we always come prepared with some kind of topic, but we really like to hear what you have to say. You can either join in our discussion of the topic at hand, or you can bring up something new that you have, you've thought about, you've studied, maybe a question you've got from the past about religion or Bible things or even spiritual things in general, or maybe some cultural issue you'd like to talk about. We're not even averse to talking about politics in a certain way. We're not here to take political sides particularly, but we know that politics and religion intersect a lot, unfortunately, in a lot of ways. I know people think they can separate those out, but they can't. And the church or religious things intersect with just ordinary life. I know some people like to separate those things out, that I have my church life and then I have my real life, and those two things can't be separated very much, because we believe being just a Christian involves all of life, every part of you. And so we want to talk to people about being just a Christian here in the 21st century like they were in the first century. And that's why the show is called We Are Just Christians, not part of some man-made denomination. Gary and I are not here to uphold the teachings of some religious tradition or some group. We're here to try to teach the Bible
or
the New Testament says, or some creed book, anything like that. We're here to try to uphold what the Scriptures say, and that means that we have to do a lot of reading and thinking ourselves about that and try to examine what the Bible says. And so when you call in with a question or a comment, an opinion or a statement, we're going to evaluate that on the basis of this question: what does the Bible say? And we'll try to give you a response or an answer. If you ask a question, that's going to be our first thought: what does the Bible say? And I know a lot of people are interested in that. You can decide what you're going to do with it then. We can show you what the Bible says. We can point you to different references, even if we don't know how to explain them all together. We can certainly point you to different references in the Bible that you can look up. And then what you do with that, that's going to be on your shoulders to do something with that that's appropriate. But that's our response. What does the Bible say? So that's what We Are Just Christians is about.
No one is going to stand in the judgment for you except you.
No, except you. That's right. So let me give you the numbers. You can reach us here on We Are Just Christians at 772-340-1590. 772-340-1590. Is the number to reach us, 772-340-1590. That's the live call-in number. If you'd like to reach us by text message, we'll try to respond to text during the show. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't, but we'll try to do that, and we certainly will take into consideration your texts for a future show. That number is 772-260-6120, 772-260-6120. 6120. That's my number. That's Mike's number. And then we'll give you Gary's text number, 772-260-6220. 6220 is his number. So you can text us. People do that. In fact, we receive as much or more response by text message as we do by phone calls these days. I suppose we've moved away from the phone. We went to email, and now culturally we're on the text messages. And pretty soon, I'm not sure what's next, but it'll be something else next. But I was reading, going over with my high school class the other night, Gary, some of the differences in different generations they've studied. And to people that are young now, teenagers, what you have is that to them, an email is a formal form of communication.
A formal?
Formal communication is email and text message and other messages like that are informal. Whereas with us, email is informal. Written letters are formal, right?
Right.
Phone calls might fall somewhere in between those two.
Well, I can remember when people actually, about the only way you could send messages was snail mail or
right.
regular mail.
And if you really wanted to spend money, you went and got a telegram right. or telegraph, but that really wasn't...
And that was more of an informal thing, the quick passage.
The quick message.
Yeah.
We have a phone call, so we'll get that in just a second, but I was reading this morning even, Gary, that Alexander Graham Bell tried to sell his new invention because he was strapped for cash to Western Union for $100,000, and they rejected it, saying it's an impractical device, a toy, that no one would ever use, since they could all go down to the Western Union office and send a telegram so much more quickly and easily. And the idea that anybody would ever connect all the houses in the United States with telephone lines was completely preposterous.
Oh, there's so many examples in history of those things.
I know. So in any event, let's go to the telephones. Are you there, Ken? I'm doing fine. How are you? What's on your mind today? Yeah, I'm getting an echo. Go ahead. We'll try to listen to hear what you're saying anyway. What is it?
That's going to be hard to find that one.
I think we lost him. No phones? Okay. All right. Sorry about that. We'll see if we can get, if he wants to try back or you can talk with him there, Mike, but at the station, that was Mike from the radio station.
Or Ken text us.
Or Ken, you could text us, but sorry, we couldn't really hear what you were saying. It cut out on us. I apologize for that. I know all of us were interested in the scriptures he wanted to talk about today, but perhaps we can communicate some other way today. For some reason, there's a technical issue. Well, Gary, I got a couple of things we can go to, and maybe Ken or some other caller can get through either by text message or by phone. You can reach us by text at 772-260-6120 or 772-260-6220 are the two text numbers you can reach us by. We'd be glad to hear from any of you out there that way, and we'd love to hear your comments, and you can take the show any direction that you want to take it today. Well, Gary, I was reading a little bit over the last week or two. A couple of things have come out, maybe in the last month, that I'll throw under the title of Christian cannabis. I know you had another subject. Maybe we can get to that, too. We probably can do both of these today. But this has got me interested for several reasons in the subject of Christian marijuana. And I'll give you a little background. It's been written about some. I don't know if we've ever really addressed this very much on this show, but I'm sure there's interest in this subject out there because of the legalization of marijuana in our lifetime, in this state and all around the United States, and the skyrocketing use of marijuana over our lifetimes, Gary, going back into the 60s. And so, you know, these trends don't come out of nowhere. The legalization of marijuana isn't something that somebody just was doing some scientific experiments a few years ago, discovered how wonderful marijuana is for medical purposes, and then now they've developed all this medical marijuana because they made this new scientific discovery. Folks, that isn't what happened. Well, it's because everybody's been smoking it for 50 years, or everybody, but a lot of people have. And
it's been around
for much, much longer than that.
It's been around for several millennia.
Yeah. So it isn't some new thing. It's just that our culture has decided this is a good thing in the last few years. Now, why is that? I'm always curious as to why things don't happen in a vacuum. And they happen for various reasons. So in any event, what got me interested in having this conversation today came out a couple months ago, Craig Gross. Years ago, about 20 years ago or so, 18, this fellow named Craig Gross started a ministry, in his words, a ministry in California called Triple X Church, XXX Church. And they've had a website for a long time and a work trying to help people overcome porn addiction. That's why it's Triple X Church. He started going to porn conventions, setting up a booth talking about Jesus at porn conventions years ago. Now, I understand, according to his account, he was criticized by religious people for that. I got no problem in particular with that idea, as long as you're not participating in it. I don't buy the idea that Jesus went into bars and drank with people, you know, and that's how he converted them, because he went into bars and got drunk with them. And I don't buy that approach to evangelism. But I have no problem in going where people are and meeting them where they are and teaching them the gospel, per se. But he started this, and it became very popular. In fact, there's a church out in California called Triple X Church, an actual church or group of people. Some of the people involved in the church are ex-porn stars and actors and actresses and people involved in the industry that produced it who have come out of that. And so that's probably helping people in some way. Well, within the last year, he has come out, and now he has a new ministry called Christian Cannabis. That's the name of his ministry. You can look it up on the internet, and it's really a business. Not only on here is it a site where people talk about the use of marijuana, who are Christians and all that, but it's a site where he's developed several different kinds of products that have to do with marijuana. And, you know, he has, let me see if I can find it here. I know I just looked at it here earlier this morning. I don't see it. But he has a brand of marijuana. He's got it called Peace, one called Pain, and one called Serenity. And he's got different formulations of marijuana products, depending on what you want to accomplish, kind of like a health food store. You know, you take this essential oil for that and this aromatherapy for that. Well, he's got various kinds of marijuana he's developed, all from the Christian standpoint, to help you out. And you can go on this website and buy this. And so that's part of his ministry or service. And he did an interview, wrote an article written about it. And then he did an interview with a church leader's website that I read sometimes, a podcast. And the podcasts, I like to listen to them, but they're hard to really, I have to transcribe it before I can use it for a show like this. But there he brought forth the idea, which was a little more controversial, that cannabis has a spiritual value, a spiritual usage to bring you closer to God.
Okay.
So he touts the medical benefits of it, and perhaps a little bit of the recreational use of marijuana, but also now the spiritual use of marijuana. Now, by the way, we did get a message from Ken. So I'm going to drop this subject of what we picked out of Christian Cannabis. We might come back to that. And if you want to call or text about that, you're welcome to. But let me read what Ken sent to the radio station here.
What were the, did he send you the scriptures?
Deuteronomy 30, verse 11 through 16.
Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 16.
So let me look that up. I just now got it myself. We're doing this show live by the seat of our pants, right?
Right.
And let me, I kind of have an idea what that passage says, but I'm going to look it up just to be sure we're on the same page. Oh, I did it wrong. Hang on. Boy, live radio, it's pretty interesting, isn't it? Here you hear me typing
in. Verse 11, for this commandment which I command you today is not too mysterious for you, nor is it far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend into heaven for us and to bring it to us that we may hear it and do it, nor is it beyond the sea. And he goes on.
He says, read down through verse 16 and then verse 19.
Okay.
Okay, that's what Ken said to do.
Okay, nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, who will go over the sea and for us to bring it to us that we may hear it and do it, but the word is very near you in your mouth and in your heart that you may do it. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil, in that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments, his statutes, and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and that the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away, then that's 17.
All right.
Which is, you know, basically this appears to be...
Read verse 19.
Verse 19?
No, just read verse 19. He says skip.
I call heaven and earth as a witness today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life that both you and our descendants may live.
Okay. So here's what his message says. God is telling us that you are not stupid, and verse 19 gives us good choices or bad choices. And then in Exodus chapter 1, verses 15 through 19,
okay,
the midwives in Egypt refused to kill the children.
Okay? Exodus chapter 1.
Yeah, and verse 15 says, the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shipra and the other was Puah. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stools, if it is a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but save the male children alive, and so forth. And this is where you find the exposure of the children, setting them out into the elements to be killed, and so forth. But so he says they did it because they feared God. If you fear God, you do not fear man or death. And I would say, you don't even fear the power of the government who would put you to death in this case, what Pharaoh was threatening to do. So I think that's a very valid point. If fear is something that, funny how this ties in, Gary. It's quite common in Christian circles and in other circles to disparage the notion of fear. Now, I know the New Testament is very clear that we've not been given a spirit of fear, but of power and life in 1 Timothy 1 forth. But there is certainly a place for fear or respect all throughout the Bible. Jesus says, don't fear him who can kill the body, but fear him who is able to cast both body and soul into hell. Because we're supposed to fear. We're supposed to fear God and keep his commandments. So there's a healthy place for the right kind of fear in the life of believers. In fact, I say if you don't fear, you're on the verge of being a psychopath or a sociopath at least. But some people say, oh no, Christians shouldn't fear anything. Well, I don't believe that's right. This fellow that was talking about Christian cannabis, he kept going back asking the interviewer was challenging him on some of his statements. He goes, so what are you afraid of? Why are you afraid of this? Why are you afraid of marijuana? You know, finally the interviewer says, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm asking you questions. It's the old it's the current fad of everything is a phobia.
Creating a phobia.
It's a phobia. Homophobia. I'm not afraid of homosexuals because I oppose a certain way of acting or a lifestyle. I don't have transphobia. Like, I'm afraid of transgender people.
Well, the problem
is a psychological term which has no real meaning in a big part of the world.
I think the problem is even worse than that. They call it homophobia, or they call it Islamophobia, and a phobia is an unreasoning fear. There, you know.
Well, that's how it would be defined in psychological places.
An unreasonable fear. You know, I can be afraid of the effects of what it will have on society. But that's not an unreasonable fear.
Gary, I'm old enough to remember the first time we began to use the phrase homophobia in our society that I recall. It was the idea being put forth when I was young that if you were against a homosexual or against homosexuality, it was because Freud put forth this idea that it was because you had a latent desire for this yourself, that you were inclined to be homosexual. And since that created a fear in you, then you feared homosexuals because you were afraid you might want to be like them. Well, that kind of twisted, perverted kind of thinking is rather odd, don't you think? But that's where this idea of then that phrase homophobia got transferred onto any kind of person who was against homosexuality for moral or ethical reasons. Oh, you're only against it because you're afraid that you yourself want to be a homosexual.
Well, it's applied. Now,
it's just a red herring, as it were.
Well, it's applied to anything that you're against. And basically, that's
right.
Where
I'm not afraid I'm going to become like an Islamist because someone might accuse me of Islamophobia. I think there's probably good reason for a lot of people to be afraid of radical Islam. So that's the point you're making.
Yes.
It's not an irrational fear.
It's not an irrational fear.
Now, my wife is afraid of snakes. Is that irrational? Not entirely. There are dangerous snakes, right?
Right.
But fear of tiny lizards. Or frogs is probably to
be fearful of a snake in terms of almost a hysterical reaction, and that's an unreasonable fear.
Well, it's irrational. Yes.
But I really have a problem with the way the left has changed the definition of things to belittle the things that they're against and the people that they're against, and that's what we're seeing with the use of these words.
I'm not really commenting on the left-right issue about it. What I am commenting on is this idea, and it maybe it's related, the idea that whenever you oppose something, that, well, you must be afraid of something. I'm not afraid of marijuana. I just think we should have an actual open discussion about the good and the bad of it, especially as it relates to the Bible. Now, in this case, I think Ken is trying, if I know we can't communicate with him, so I would like to clarify the point he's making, but God is telling you you're not stupid. Yeah, you can understand the word of God is not so far above you can't get it.
Right.
And ironically enough, if you study religious philosophy, you will see that a lot of these theologians, Kant and others, said, well, God is the other, and God is so far transcendent above us that he cannot really communicate with us. This is the basis of a lot of Eastern religion, that God is other than human, he's other than us, and therefore he cannot communicate with us effectively. Well, and so he's used these demigods, these semi-gods, like Jesus would be one, and Krishna, to communicate with man in some earthly way. And he uses words because that's the best he can do, is words.
Well, I don't necessarily agree to a certain degree that he is other. He is not.
Well, he is other, but that doesn't mean.
But that's not. I disagree with the conclusion they draw from that.
That's my point about that verse that Ken quoted in Deuteronomy 30. The very point, and this verse is quoted in the New Testament also, that the very point he's making is, yes, I am other, but I am communicating with you in a way that you can understand it.
There's also another.
I'm not so high that I can't reach you.
Okay. There's also another point here that's inferred from this is that we have the free will to choose one or the other, particularly the Deuteronomy verse. Basically, this implies that you have a choice to make. He's given you both. What did he say? He's given you life and death, good and evil?
Yes.
You have a choice. These verses, in my view, go entirely against basically the Calvinist approach to it, that you don't have any free will.
Yeah.
That God has to do it all. He says,
he's very clear here.
Yeah, he's very clear here.
You certainly have a choice about what you do.
Right.
Right.
And that's something else that we've talked about on this show. These verses are clearly indicating you've got to really distort the reading of these to get something other than free will out of these verses.
Now we have a little clarification on what Ken meant. I think he called back, and Mike there at the station is able to talk on his phone with him, but we can't somehow get it here. It's not working right. He said Ken called back and said that in the Exodus story, it was the women who stood up to do what was right. He said he believes that that will have to be what happens today, with women being the ones to stop abortions. And I think that's probably a good observation. In the end, if they're the ones who say they have power over their bodies, then they're going to have to do something about it. And here it was in the Exodus story. Women said to Pharaoh, these poor slave women said to Pharaoh, you know, we can't do this, we're not going to. And they kind of worked around him. And saved as many Hebrew males as they could. And Moses' mother and father saved him, which came to be part of the whole story. So that's probably correct, that today it is going to have to be people who are giving birth that are going to have to stop it, say,
but then on the other hand, I see the basically I see the feminists as leading us down the wrong path in many ways. As a matter of fact, they're
well, feminism is not a female philosophy. It's a political philosophy, and it's not just about females, because more females than not disagree with modern feminism. So it's not about being a female. If you're a female, it doesn't mean you're a feminist.
But
that's a political philosophy.
I'll have to say, though, I think many of the proponents of it, at least publicly, are taking that, are women.
Oh, no, they say, well, you're female, so you should think this way.
Yeah, right.
It's groupthink. And that certainly isn't true in real life, and it doesn't have to be true in this case. Or the idea that, oh, well, the Bible teaches that women are subservient, and so they're not thinking. Well, here's a case in the Bible where it was the women in Exodus 1, the midwives, who stood up to Pharaoh and wouldn't obey him when he was trying to kill their young. That's what it is going to take today, people to realize that I'm just not going to do this, and they'll have to somehow bring a stop to what it is, to abortion. And I think that's happening. There have been so many. It's kind of hidden in our from the common culture, because the press, like Facebook and people like that, won't let you put these kinds of articles on there. But some of the ones I was reading even the past week, Gary, where so many people who worked in the abortion industry have left that industry because of what they've seen. You know when they do one of these late-term abortions, most abortions, in fact, where they suck the baby out of the mother's womb, what they do first is they go in there, a D&C, and they use a cutting tool that slices the baby into pieces. And then they suck everything out, and then they have to account for all the pieces. They put everything on a tray.
They have to count,
make sure there's nothing left in the mother. Or they go in there with forceps and literally grab parts of the baby and rip it apart, forcibly rip it out. And so they rip off an arm and drag it out of the mother, rip off a leg or a part of, or a head, and drag it out of the mother. And then these nurses and other doctors have to put all this material on a tray and piece it together to make sure they got everything. And this has just been a horrendous experience for so many people. They have nightmares years later about this event, these events. And can you see why? This is so brutal. And the reason for this is not because the mother's life was in danger or anything like that, like an ectopic pregnancy. If they don't even do this with an ectopic pregnancy, they go in there and cut the fallopian tube out. That's all they can do for an ectopic pregnancy. That's not which would endanger the mother's life. This is just because someone says it's inconvenient for me now to have a baby at this time in my life. Most all the time. The percentage of these things that are done because of a rape or incest is so insignificant that it doesn't change the fact. Even if you allow those cases that could be provable, you would reduce abortion to almost nothing in the United States if you allowed just those cases to be proven. So the argument is it a good thing? And that's what he's saying here. The women who see this, they're turning against it. Many of them who used to run these abortion clinics and be big shots in this, when they begin to really think about it, they turn away from it. And I'm not sure what it's going to take. It's like a lot of other things. We sanitize it all, make it all sanitary, use euphemisms for it. It's just a disgusting thing. You know, I can't help but think of the story at the end in 2 Kings 22 and 23. We were reading the other night in our Bible class about Zephaniah at the end of the Old Testament, where this good king Josiah comes in, reads the law after it had been lost, and realizes that all these idols and other things been set up in the temple area had to go, that God was going to judge the land. Because of that. So Josiah sets out and he tears down all these idols, even in the temple And near the temple, they've been sacrificing their own babies to these foreign gods.
Oh, yes.
Passing them through the fire. Even the kings pass their children through the fire to these idols as a sacrifice. And Josiah got rid of all that. And then you read that when that they had a Passover like they never had since the days of the king, the judges, which means all through the time of Saul and David and Solomon, they hadn't kept the Passover properly. Now, what I thought of when I read that, Gary, is not how terrible God was for judging Israel and destroying them, but how patient he had been for 400 years when they had disobeyed him openly. And then it finally got to the point where they were sacrificing their children in his own temple and sacrificing to foreign gods in his own temple. And he finally couldn't take it anymore and said, I've had enough. So I couldn't help but think, I said, so what? Now, I know we're not Israel. I'm not making this point that we're Israel in the New and that God considers the United States Israel. But I know that God doesn't change his ways so much that he doesn't judge nations for their utter callousness and wickedness.
Well,
especially people that claim to be servants of his, like so many people in the United States do. And yet we condone and support and vote for people that allow this to happen in our country and try to get it to increase and grow. You know, it used to be the motto of politicians was abortion should be rare and what was that they would always say? I forgot. Rare and something, you know, meaning we're trying to we allow it, but we're trying to decrease it and make it very rare and uncommon. Well, now the politicians are openly saying, no, we want unrestricted abortion. Not only to birth, but now they want
after
birth abortions. Most of our many of our politicians are in favor of that and have come out so in the last debate or two publicly in favor of this. And so I just wonder what is the limit that we're willing to go to here, and what is God going to do to this a nation who promotes this?
Well, he judged other nations based on the same thing. Basically, when he told Israel to go in and take the land and basically do away with the Canaanites, what were they practicing? They were practicing these very things.
Thing. Now, I'll tell you, you've heard me say this, and this is pure speculation on my part, but it's my opinion based on my reading of the Bible and thinking about these things. I do not believe that the communist China is going to be blessed in the coming years, because what they're doing now, Gary, is they're taking these prisoners they've got, political prisoners, and they're while the person is still alive, they're harvesting their organs and selling those organs internationally for transplants. So some of the organs that are coming from China, if not a lot of them, are coming from people that were basically just killed, medically put to death to harvest their organs and sell them to the highest bidder. And some of the people that this are happening to are people that claim to be Christians. That's who they consider to be a political prisoner, an enemy of the state. It's coming in this country that when you are a Bible-believing Christian, you are being viewed as mentally ill. I got articles in my own files that this is what's being said by politicians and by bioethicists and by other people in high institutions, that people who believe in the New Testament as literal are mentally ill and they are enemies of the state. Well, where is this going? These things aren't happening in a vacuum. They're going somewhere. Now, I don't know how long it will take, but from what I can read in the Bible, I don't think God will let that go unchallenged over time. I'm not saying it's the end times. I'm not saying it's the end of the world. But I'm saying God will not allow that to go on unchallenged over time. Now, ironically, God uses as his tool in these things, he uses his tool people and Christians, you know, and so forth. We had a couple other texts. I guess one of them says that I meant to go ahead and quote Romans chapter 10. We were talking about this idea that
Let me go back.
Let me get off my rant for a second, Gary. Let me give the numbers. I'm going to go back to Romans 10. The numbers to reach, we are just Christians. I think you can call in or you can try to call in. 772 340-1590. If you'd like to text the show, you certainly can do that. We got a couple of texts this morning. 772-260-6120 and 772-260-6220. You know, this passage from Deuteronomy 30 that the caller mentioned, where he says, don't say in your heart, who will ascend to heaven, and so forth. That verse is quoted in Romans 10, where Paul says in Romans 10:6, but the righteousness of faith speaks in this way. Do not say in your heart, who shall ascend to heaven, that is to bring Christ down from above, or who will descend into the abyss, that is to bring Christ up from the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, it says, in your mouth and in your heart, that is the word of faith which we preach. If you confess with your mouth the Lord Jesus and believe in your heart that God has raised him from the dead, you'll be saved. It doesn't take some spiritual journey that you have to take into the heavens using medical marijuana or whatever to get to Christ or get to God. The word is, and you don't have to go into the depths of hell to get Christ to come up. The word is right here, he says. And Paul says you can believe and confess and be saved and so forth. Now, a texter then says, I'm not sure what this means. He says, CDB oil with minimal THC helps someone close to me with chronic fatigue and pain. Well, I'm not arguing against the legitimate use of medical marijuana. Of course, we haven't even discussed the issue yet. I think that's jumping a little bit ahead. Does the Bible authorize the medical use of painkillers?
Well, it does. In terms of alcohol.
It does.
It says give a dying man strong drink.
Right, and in 1 Timothy 5:23, don't take wine. You can take wine for your stomach's sake.
Right.
Paul is endorsing the medicinal use of alcohol. I have no problem with that. The problem is then people want to distort that to talk about the spiritual benefits of alcohol, getting close to God. So it says, I'm having trouble relating verse 19 with anti-abortion. Now, I'm not sure which verse 19 is being discussed there, whether it's let me go back and look. I'm thinking maybe it's verse 19 in Deuteronomy 30, where it says, I call heaven and earth as your witnesses today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life that both you and your descendants may live. Well, I don't know that he's talking about abortion and that, but I think he is saying that when you obey me, you choose life. When you disobey me, you choose death. And so when the Hebrew midwives refused to kill these children, which they knew was against the will of God, they were choosing life in two ways. They were choosing life for those children, but they also were choosing life for themselves because they know that in choosing God's way and God's will, that they would live. He says, if you don't keep my word, I'll destroy you.
Well, that's the context beginning in verse 11. For this commandment which I command you today is not too mysterious for you. So his first subject
is commandments. The commandment is to love him and follow him. That's right.
And then in verse 15, he says, see that I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. Basically, here's the choice. Here are my commandments. Follow them or don't. The context of this is the general following of God's commandments and what he wants us to do. I don't think it's quite that specific in any of it. Of course, you know, I would say abortion falls within that, but not.
I don't think that was Ken's point. I may be wrong about that. Maybe Ken can call Mike back. But I think
you say verse 20 says, "Go on that you may love the Lord, that you may obey His voice, that you may cling to Him, for He is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give to them." Basically, he's saying, "This is what I want you to do."
I think the anti-abortion part would be, or at least the choosing life part, was that the Hebrew midwives were told by a king to put these young men to death, these young babies to death. They would not do it. And what they, ironically, some people think, Gary, to expand upon that story a little bit, that what Moses' mother eventually did was kind of what the king was commanding, to expose these infants, just throw them away. And so she quote unquote, exposed her son by putting him out in a basket, but not completely. And then had her daughter watch, and she did it in a way that someone would find the infant and take care of him, which is exactly what happened. That was providential that Moses was spared. But I can't picture anywhere in the Old Testament where God sanctioned the killing of babies in this way or unborn children. In fact, the penalties were against those who killed a woman, who hurt a woman with child, and so forth. So, I don't know. I know that maybe some were honing in on this phrase, choose life, I'm not sure that's where the anti-abortion movement got its slogan from Deuteronomy 30, choose life, could be. I'd never read that or heard that. I think he's just making the point that if you obey God and God's word and make the right choice, you will be blessed by God. When you don't, over time, God will bring a curse upon you. Some of those curses are built right into the law itself, right into the nature that God made itself. China's suffering the effects of their own policy. Because they made this one-child policy, oh, that sounds so perfect. When you make a one-child policy, you may not write this into the law itself, but by definition, as written, it can do nothing but produce death and violence. You're going to have the state to enforce a one-child policy, and then have penalties when you have two. Given the nature of human behavior, you will have death. And so, they opened up clinics, and people were aborting their babies when they found out that they could. When the children were born, they could only have one child. If the first child was a girl, they killed it. They got rid of it. They could only have one child. Well, they didn't want a girl. And so, in China, they have a huge disproportionate number of males to females. It's caused social chaos over there.
Yeah.
It's the same type of thing that happens in countries where they go to war, like Russia, and lose 20 million men in a war. The whole society's upended, and social chaos eventually erupts from this. So some of the penalty for disobeying God and not choosing life is built into the system. It's built into the way God made it.
Well, going back to the abortion issue for just a second, basically the arguments are being made that basically the child is not a person. There's no personality. There's not anything in terms of what would make us individuals in this child. And yet I would refer to the comments of, let's go to Jeremiah 1 for just a moment and read beginning in verse 4. He says, "Then the word of the Lord came to me, saying," this is Jeremiah speaking, "the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah," and he says in verse 5, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you, set you apart. I ordained you a prophet to the nations." He said all this was done before he was born.
Yeah.
He says that all this was done, basically, I formed you in the womb to do these things.
Now, the question is, does that apply to all of us? I don't know. But it certainly knows that it's just not just an accident, and it's certainly a life. God has an interest in unborn children as well as children that are born.
Right.
You could say a lot, derive a lot of things from that. You know, John the Texter says, made the point you did, and maybe I need to go back to that. He says, well, what the verse proves, I think he's trying to say what the verse proves about choosing life is that you have a choice. Man has free will. And I believe that's 100% true. In fact, it's one of the passages I used in a sermon a couple of months ago, Gary, called "The God of Calvin versus the God of the Bible." Okay, two gods. I think I called the sermon "Two Gods." And so you can look it up on our website, wearejustchristians.com. And there you can find the sermon a couple months ago, "Two Gods, the God of Calvin versus the God of the Bible." And one of the main point I'm making is just this one, that the God of Calvin has man as having no agency, no free will. Everything is predetermined. And yet God says, you can choose here. The word is not far from you. You can hear what I'm saying. You can understand it. You need to do what I say. And you can choose life, or you can choose death. Very difficult to argue that there was no free will there, unless you say that God was just kind of making the appearance that man had a choice, when really, according to the Presbyterian catechism, all things that come to pass have already been preordained by God. Nothing has ever happened, including the next sentence that I'm going to say, that was not from all eternity predetermined by God. Okay, so that's all been... Now, if you believe, if you're a Presbyterian, that's the catechism, that's the confession that you... Presbyterian Confession of Faith and the Westminster Catechism both say that exact thing. Now, it's so easy to go to the Bible, and either you have to say one of two things to read the Bible. Either that the catechism of the Presbyterians and John Calvin is wrong and should be rejected, or that God was simply giving the illusion that man had free will, but man does not have free will. Now, I don't believe that free will is an illusion. I've got articles in my files here, Gary. I keep having a mental picture of my old file cabinet where I have five or six drawer, 10-drawer file cabinets with articles in them. Really, I'm talking about my computer when I say I have files here.
Well, I keep...
That scientists, modern scientists, write articles saying free will is an illusion because we've all been predetermined by our genetic code how we're going to act and what we're going to be. How is that different than Calvinism? One's a religious answer to a problem. One's a so-called scientific answer. They're both wrong.
Right.
And I know that because I stayed at the Hollywood Express last night. No, I know that because I've read the Bible and tried to understand at what we call on this show a plain reading of the Bible tells you that either God is a liar or man has free will, whichever way you want to choose it. This is a critical issue. You've heard me talk about this many times in recent months. I know people are kind of sick of it, but this is a critical issue for modern religious people and modern people who are going in, being inundated with a secular viewpoint that everything's been predetermined by evolution and by genetics, and humans really can't choose what they're going to do. This is a critical issue to get in your mind. Christians cannot fall for that. The world will lose all hope if we fall for it. Marxism, leftism, is based on this very idea that it's, you know, the determinism of the universe has been laid out, that everything is moving toward Marxism, and it's all been laid out. It cannot be stopped, is the idea. And that's the whole point of Marxism, why leftists are so confident at times, because Karl Marx and Lenin believed in evolution and in the fact that man does not have free will.
Well, to me, it's you have to have that predetermination in your mind. In other words, you have to have decided in your mind this is the way it is to read those passages in that kind
that
of context.
That way. Wasn't one of Hitler's most famous propaganda movies called The Bondage of the Will?
Yeah.
See, all these people are the same. They call them left and right wing. They're not different. They're the same. They all believe in the subjugation of man to a certain idea, and man not having free will to live in good conscience before God. And so that's the reason they need to be opposed. So,
but that predisposition that we have to look at things in a certain way without consideration of the facts or the things around it that would indicate other, the common sense that goes with it, is a problem that faces us in many aspects of life, not just in religion.
Right.
And one of the things I think God is trying to get us to do in reading the scriptures and understanding how he wants us to behave, when he says be sober-minded, he's saying, you know, think about what you're doing. Think about what
right.
you're saying.
Right.
You should consider these things before you do it. And that takes you away from that predisposition to come to the same conclusion over many, many sections. It's hard to get around, and I admit it's a difficult thing, but it's there. And it's one of the things that I think, you know, you mentioned something there the other day that we don't think of very much, I think, when we study the Bible. This is what, if I could pass on to our listeners any one thing that I think is the most valuable thing about Bible study, is you can't come to the conclusion just based on one verse. You can't develop a conclusion of what the Bible says just based on one verse. You have to consider it in its whole.
And especially in light of what is being said around it.
Right.
And secondly, you can't interpret Bible verses by a preconceived notion that you have.
All right. Predisposition.
A predisposition without considering the other presuppositions that might be at play.
Right.
And so, you know, that's what people do. So that's why I keep saying that, for example, that Calvinism is a philosophy. It's a system based on starting off with one premise, that God is sovereign, and that definition of sovereignty, I believe God is sovereign, but Calvin's definition of sovereignty is that God controls everything down to the finest detail, and if he did anything but that, he wouldn't be sovereign. And once you start off with, and therefore, that leads you to the conclusion that man is not free in any event, any circumstance, and from that, all the other tenets of Calvinism come.
Right.
And every other Bible verse is read in that context because it's a philosophy. It isn't letting the Bible speak for itself. I believe what the Bible teaches is, for example, that God is sovereign. In fact, his sovereignty is so great that he decided to let man have some agency or free will. He wanted to be freely loved by a created creature. Why? We don't have all the answers to that. But God wanted a freely chosen love from a free creature.
Well,
he created angels and men, and in so doing, by nature, he had to remove himself from that area of the universe and so part of his sovereignty was choosing to allow man to have free will. In the end, is God's will going to be done?
Yes.
Absolutely, because he doesn't just abandon man to his own freedom.
Well,
he interacts with man all along.
To me, Mike, it makes God even more powerful and even more, how would I say it, the ability to do things, and that he can let man have his own free will and still effectively get the outcome that he wants. In other words, basically, he can let you and I make our own decisions, and yet he can still get the outcome that he desires.
Yes. But he can't save everybody and do that.
Well, he decided not to save everybody and do that.
Because people, if he gives them freedom, some will choose not to do that.
Well,
and he already pre-decided not to save those who wouldn't obey him.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He already pre-decided that.
Yes.
And so now the question is, what are you going to do about it?
But he can have his outcome in the world with, and at the same time give us free will, makes him, in my mind, a more powerful
greater God than
anything.
And I think this is what it talks about when it talks about that in Ephesians 3, that the church puts on display, as it were, the majesty of God, and that we're being viewed by the principalities and powers. God is wanting to see how this turns. What's the church? Well, it's those who have faith in Christ, the saved ones, those who love God, as Job would not do. You know, he doesn't love you for nothing, only because you put a fence around him. Well, God says, okay, I'm going to show you some people.
I'm going to show you
some that love me just because I'm me.
Well,
and will do what I say just because I'm me. They love me.
And
you can't take them out of my hand. There's some that are going to be like that.
Well, and the other thing, think for a minute about the value of love. Does the love of someone who loves you simply because of what you give them and what you provide for them as valuable as someone who loves you for what you are? You know, our children love us in that way, but then there's some, at some point we depart from that, because sometimes a child will love his parents simply for what they can give them.
I was on a marriage blog this week. I was doing a little reading, and this wife was writing in, and she was asking a question about her husband, that he's lately been saying, he doesn't talk much, but he's been saying things like, I feel like that all I am is a checkbook for people. I'm a checkbook. And she doesn't understand this. And I gave a response, but I think there are a lot of men who feel
they're just a checkbook.
That they're just a checkbook, right?
Well, stop and think for a minute,
and
Mike.
And I just told him, I said, you're going to have to prove to him that you love him for who he is. Just like, and I got this from this very idea. Not for what he can give you or your dependence upon him financially or whatever it may be, but that you love them for who he is himself. And when you do that, he won't feel like a checkbook. He'll give you freely then. He'll freely give you everything.
But stop and think. I can program my computer to come up in the morning and tell me, say, good morning, Gary, I love you.
Yeah, what good is that?
What value is that? And that's the same thing the Calvinist is saying, that God has programmed you to do whatever you do. What value is that love? It doesn't have any value.
Right.
So,
and that's exactly right. Well, we've got a couple minutes left, Gary. I just wanted to close. I know we've been all over the place today.
Right.
One of those shows. We apologize for the technical problems we've had, but we do appreciate Ken calling back and giving the... And then Mike at the station there, the program director, can text me through Skype, and I can communicate with him. So that worked out pretty good. Then we've had two or three texts today. We really appreciate you doing that. We want to refer you first to our website, wearejustchristians.com. Wearejustchristians.com. Take a look there. You'll find, even as I mentioned this morning, sermons on various subjects that you can listen to. Not that they're the greatest end-all and be-all, but they'll give you some Bible references to look at. Most of them are filled with different scriptures for you to consider on different subjects, going back many years. We also would invite you to come and be with us here in our assemblies at the Church of Christ on Savona Boulevard, 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard, 2196 Southwest Savona Boulevard here in Port St. Lucie. And we have a Bible class this morning at 10 o'clock for our children and adults. At 11 o'clock, we have our worship and preaching. 6 p.m. tonight, we have a Bible study on Zephaniah. And 7:30 on Wednesday evenings, we also have a Bible study for you to consider. So we invite you to do that. Take a look. Come and be with us. We'd love to have you. And we hope that you'll spend your week this week contemplating God and understanding the Scriptures. And join us again next Sunday morning for We Are Just Christians. May God bless you.
Oh, fill my cup, let it overflow.